So, Dave, you're back from Emerald City Comic Con, a triumphant weekend out there, and we're going to be talking about that at the top of the show. But I've got a bone to pick with you because I find out all weekend I've been seething with jealousy because you were rooming with that Jake Parker.
Oh, Brad, there's always another man, isn't there? There's always another man.
All weekend long, I wasn't getting any texts. I wasn't getting any calls. I bet you.
Oh, God, that's funny.
Because you were giving him all of your attention.
Love the one you're with, Brad. Love the one you're with. If you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with.
So you guys split a hotel room out there in Seattle?
Yeah, so he was coming up to Emerald City Comic Con, and his hotel situation fell through, so he had said, hey, do you mind if I join you? And I had a room with two double beds, and I said, sure, come on, we'll split the room, no big deal.
Yeah.
And so we had a great weekend. It was a delight I was boothing right next to him, and we had a room next to him. I got to tell you, though, Brad, the one downside, as you can hear from my voice, I had what can only be described as a roller coaster of upper respiratory conditions this weekend.
Oh, you sound a little rough.
Yeah, I was at my throat. I talked too much, and I was too delightful, Brad. I was too delightful all weekend.
You sparkled in that sky bridge all weekend long.
Here's the downside for poor Jake Parker, who could not have been more delightful as a roommate. But our bathroom walls were far too thin. And I was doing a lot of those saline nasal washes to keep my my honker.
You and your moist nasals. You've got to be the only person I know that's obsessed with moist nostrils.
Brad, I'm going to tell you, it's the saving grace at Comic-Con. I will die on that hill. If you do a lot of saline washes during Comic-Con, and I was like, there was at the midway point, I was like, there's no way my throat is going to survive this Comic-Con. No way my nose, the dry recircle there, the talking to 1,000 people, all that sort of thing. And anyway, what I'm getting at, though, is I'm in the bathroom doing these saline nasal washes. Poor Jake is out there reading, I'm sure, going, well, this is a fine mess I've gotten myself into. It just, I'm sure it just sounds like two porcupines making love in the bathroom. And I'm in there washing my nose out. And like, poor guy, I just feel so sorry for him. Like, ah, ah, ah. You know, you've had a day, Brad, where you've had to keep up a smile for 8 hours straight as everybody comes up to you and you're, hey, how you doing? I'm Jake Parker. And then you're like, finally, I'm going to kick off my shoes. I'm going to read a little bit of philosophy in my bed. And then your roommate, Dave Kellett's in there going, quack, burg, 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 burg. Just a fire hose to his nose. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that would be a little bit unnerving. I hope he brought earplugs or something.
He did. Thank God. Oh, thank God he brought earplugs.
Really?
He for real. And you know what? God bless him, because I'm sure when I get a sore throat and stuff, it also starts to trigger my asthma. So I'm sure I was snoring McGee. Anyway, a treat it is to room with Dave Kellett at a Comic-Con. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, that's half of the challenge of sharing a room at a comic convention.
Yeah.
You've got to be very, very careful, because there's been some times, where you end up rooming with somebody that just, it isn't a good fit. And when you find somebody that you can get along with, that is a good, a good hotel partner that you can stomach for that amount of time, it's a thing of beauty. Man, if you don't have a good fit, that can turn into a long, arduous weekend.
Oh, amen. And even when it's a good fit, like when you and I have roomed in the past.
Yeah.
I remember even the best of friends, like I love you to death and would give you a kidney. But I remember rooming with you and just small foibles like, well, is that where you're going to keep your socks, David? You're going to keep them over there? Is that where we're going to be keeping our socks? All right. Well, I guess that's one place someone could keep their socks.
Some people would put socks there, I guess. That could be considered a sock place.
I guess one could keep one's socks there if one wanted to. I guess that's acceptable.
Can you imagine my poor wife? She's been living with this for 20 years. Oh, man.
But it was a good show. I have to say, Brad, leading into it, we might as well dive right into it. Let me do the intro first, because God forbid we skip past that.
You've got such a case of con brain. This is going to be a great show.
Oh, boy. I sound like a drunk old smoky hobo.
Well, Brad, I tell you what, we had a good Comic-Con. I'm Dave Kellett.
I've aged 70 years by going to Emerald City Comic Con. Anyway, I do want to say hello to everybody and welcome to this week's Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and the smooth-voiced cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend, apparently Hobo McGee, who's been living a hard life out on the rails, smoking tobacco straight from the palm of his hand, apparently, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
You know, Dave, they make cigarettes with filters now. And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab and Marlboro. And Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics and proper throat care, Brad Geiger. All right, so let's dive right into it. Emerald City Comic Con is a 4-day show in Seattle, Washington. And Seattle is a very comic-supporting town.
Yeah.
Between Microsoft, Nike, Costco, what other companies are up there? Boeing. There's a good economic base.
They got that coffee. That got that coffee place up there?
Oh, yeah, the small little family-run place called Starbucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's like 5 to 7 good-size Fortune 500 companies there that support a lot of well-educated, well-read folks. So they're good comics-reading audience, and they tend to come out with money, and more than anything else, they tend to come out with support. It's a really kind, comics-loving crowd in Seattle.
Yeah.
And the show, as built by Jim DeMonacis, you remember very well, is a really fun event. It's recently been taken over by Reed Exposition, and it has most definitely gotten a more corporate feel. And we can talk about that as we go on.
Oh, has it?
Oh, yeah. And it has less of a, I don't want to be too much of a jerk, but less of a comics focus in a way that we can talk about in a second.
Uh-huh.
All that being said, I still love the show for a lot of reasons that we talked about before. There's a lot of specific cartoonists that I can only see there. I particularly have a strong fan base there, which is nice. I like the city of Seattle. I like the logistics of getting in and out of Emerald City Comic Con. And I love my booth location. I'm on what's known as a sky bridge, which has full sunlight all around me, a beautiful, airy environment. And it's a large, high ceiling. It's probably 70 feet high. So both the noise and the oxygen levels are great, right? So all that being said, I love the show. But last year, for those that remember, I made a profit, but it was like I could have made the same by staying at home. You know what I mean, Brad?
Right,
like
right.
It was the equivalent for all, because the worst part, as everybody knows about a Comic-Con, is the schlepping. You know, you're schlepping 50-pound, literally, because you've measured it at home, 50-pound suitcases through SeaTac Airport, getting it onto the Uber, getting it into your hotel, getting it up to the room, getting it down to the convention center the next day. You're schlepping hundreds of pounds of books around. Maybe you shipped other books around.
And you're losing a good 5 days all told, because most shows are 3 days. So you're losing 3 days right there. Plus, you're losing a good day in the run-up in terms of prepping for the show.
Right? Absolutely.
Take travel. Even you can almost take travel out of it, because you could build that in a little bit. You know, like arrive Friday morning. Some people try to do that. But let's say you've got a day for travel. You've got another several hours, if not an entire day before that, in terms of shipping all of your stuff and prepping your stuff and making sure that your banner reads right. Do you need to get a banner printed? All this stuff. So that's all in the run-up, several days run-up. Then you come back. You've got a day of travel, at least. And you've got, as Dave, as his voice exemplifies today, you got to recover from that show, right? Because if you don't get con crud, you're going to get something else. God knows if you buy a convention center hot dog, you're in for a couple days. You've lost at
God,
least,
terrifying.
Yeah, you've lost at least 5 days, if not more. So you've got to take that, if you're going about your business seriously, you've got to take that and think, am I really going to make enough to go? And last year, as we were talking about on the show, you were on the fence. You made a profit, which means you covered all of your costs. You covered your travel, you covered your hotel, your promotion, your food, everything was covered, and you had a certain amount of money left over. And it was a decent amount, but not enough that you had signed up without a second thought. And you said in the show a few weeks ago, I don't know whether I'm going to do this show again. I really don't. And my question to you now is, did you do well enough? Did you do better? And have you decided if you're going next year?
Well, let me put this into some easily translatable terms. So to build on Brad's point about logistics, about 2.5 weeks before the show, I shipped up 5 boxes of books, 3 to my hotel and 3 to, of all things, Dave Malky's kind family, who accepted 2 boxes for me.
So I like the way you said that. And 3 of all things to Dave Malky. I mean, you could imagine the point I was at. Poor Dave,
no,
of all things, Dave Malky.
That's not the way I was saying that. I was saying that, like, of all the wonderful, don't put this wedge between David Malky and I.
I'm done. I'm sorry. I'm teasing.
Anyway, so I shipped up 5 boxes of books, and I brought up an additional in my bags, an additional 3 boxes of books. And here's a fun pro tip that I delight in this whenever I'm able to do this. So the bag limit for a checked bag is 50 pounds, right?
Yeah.
Now, Brad, have you ever had your carry-on weighed?
My carry-on? No, I've never had a carry-on. I've had checked luggage weighed, but I've never had a carry-on weighed, no.
So my drive books are immensely heavy and dense, the hardcovers.
Oh, yeah, they're big.
And I brought up a bunch of those in a box worth in my carry-on, and that bag was 53 pounds, Bradley.
Oh, no, and they tag you for that.
Oh, they'll get you, but not if you very quickly hoist it over your head and put it in the overhead bin. Okay, you got it in there. All right. So that's my little cheat.
They were coming up the aisle with a scale to weigh it?
No. I'm saying they didn't weigh it. That's what I'm saying is you can skirt the system. So I brought over 50 pounds in my carry-on, and then I had a backpack with cardboard surrounding another 18 boxes of books. So that my backpack weighed 35 pounds. So Dave Kellett cheating the system, everybody. So if there's anybody that works for Alaska Airlines— this is Dave Kellett saying, I'm sorry that I broke your system, but I got to...
Yeah, that might explain why the plane flew crooked all the way over to Seattle.
But
it was at a slight 70-degree angle.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're experiencing a slight tilt. We're not sure what's happening. We're going to fly over Rainier with a slightly different angle.
But anyway, I get into SeaTac with 180, 190 pounds worth of stuff, and I've shipped ahead 5 other boxes, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I get to the convention center. I've got 8 boxes of books with me. And here is the good news. I sold out of all my books, Brad, all 8 boxes of books at ECCC this week.
That's tremendous. And hold on. Total, how many boxes did you send over?
8.
8 boxes. So you sent over a good amount of stock and you sold out of all of it?
Yes. I mean, to be fair, I gave Jake Parker one for his kids. He wanted a pug book. But yes, I sold out of all of it.
All right. Well, we'll measure. We won't hold that against you. But, you know, that, sooner or later, that little shit's going to have to pay up. He's going to have to learn that this stuff doesn't come free.
You know what? It's not a walk in the park, Jake Parker. You're going to pay for that book one way or the other. Actually, he did pay for it.
He paid for it with listening to you gurgling away in the bathroom.
Listening to the seahorse in his bathroom going, anyway, no, but you know what? As a side note, one thing that Jake did do is, and this happened again, Brad, I had a lovely woman come up and look at my pug book and go, is this appropriate for children? And I go, oh, yes, ma'am. I said, oh, yes, ma'am. It's all ages friendly. And there's no cursing in it. And I said, oh, no, ma'am. It's for kids. They can read it. And then there's a pause. And is there anything in here against God? And I was like, why do people keep asking me this?
My God.
What is it? Why
they
do people?
She was worried that there would be like an anti-religion message delivered by your pug?
Brad, I swear to God, I don't know why people keep asking me this about my pug book. And is there anything in here that goes against the word of God? It's like, why would I write that? Why would that even be in a kid's pug book? Like, so Jake and I had a runner for a good day and a half about the Satanist pug. And like, well, ma'am, no, there's no cussing in it. However, there's a few satanic rituals that you're going to want to avoid on page 35. So don't let your little ones read that.
I've gone ahead and I marked them with a little icon. You see the goat's head there? Yeah. Those pages you want to skip.
Yeah, anything with a goat's head, you're going to want to skip, ma'am. But so Jake, anyway, in terms of this was getting back to him paying for the pug book. He drew me the most delightful cute pug in a little devil costume and gave that as a gift. And what a delightful gift that is to have that art from Jake, because it's so ridiculous that this is twice. I've talked about this on the show before. This is twice now that someone has come up and said, does anything in this pug book go against God? It's like, go against God? It's a pug book. It talks about him piddling on trees. Like, what do you want from me?
Well, wait a minute. Which book was she holding? Because isn't the tagline of one of your pug books God's Little Weirdos?
The old one was. That one sold out a year or two ago.
Oh, okay, so she wouldn't have had that one in her hands.
Oh, I see.
Because I thought maybe she just saw the word God and thought, well, maybe this is taking swipes at the big guy.
Now I see what you mean. But yeah, but no, that wasn't the book. This book is just called Pugs Unleashed. But I just find it fascinating. Like, oh, I love this. You say Ziggy, is it? Ziggy, he seems like an interesting character. Anything in here against the book of God here? No, ma'am. There's no. Ziggy doesn't particularly take any stances on faith. It's just such a weird question.
Yeah, is there a chapter here on Revelations? Because I want to avoid Ziggy on Revelations if I can.
Yeah, well, Ziggy does take a shot at Matthew and Mark, but not Luke and John. So it's he takes an even hand on the word of the Lord. So there you go.
And really, if you read closely, Luke was always a softy anyway. So, you know, he had it coming. But really, when it comes to the heart of the good book, these pugs are right where you need them.
And then I get weird about it. Well, I mean, the pug does represent that John has a higher Christology than Mark and Matthew. So and then I get really theological about it. Anyway, I have never used the word Christology in a public forum.
Words of a guy with a 24-volume set of the Oxford English Dictionary in his studio.
I tell you what, Brad, I have never gotten to use the word Christology before, so I think that means I'm the winner of this week's vocabulary word. Yes, David used the word Christology, which no one has heard before, and which, frankly, he hasn't used in 20 years. So I'm the winner. Oh, my God. How sad.
Big, big winner.
How sad did my voice sound trying to do a game show voice? I can't even do it.
Yeah, you're limited today. You're very limited.
I'm Brad Geiger after three drinks is what I am right now. I can only do so much.
You're burying the lead. So you sold out. Can you give us some kind of a marker? How did you do compared to last year?
Okay, so last year I made
made X last year.
Yeah, okay, so I made X last year. Last year I made X in profit, right?
Yeah.
So between flight, hotel, shipping, food, and the cost of the booth, I spent X and I made from netting. Like I grossed two times X and I netted X, if that makes
this
sense.
This is turning into an SAT test. Let's do it this way. You paid all your bills. You paid your hotel, your food. You paid everything and you had X left over.
That's right.
I'm assuming this year you paid all your bills again.
I didn't skip town, if that's what you're asking. Yes, I paid my bills.
So how does your total this year relate to X last year?
So I doubled my net this year. So I have two times cost.
Yeah.
So, and that, not just books, in the prints and the pins that I brought and in original art, Seattle was very supportive this year.
Wow.
I feel like it's the Godfather. I'm like, I'm getting out. They keep dragging me back in.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was going to ask you if you were going to go back, but if you may. So last year you had a sit on the fence kind of profit. This year you had twice that much. You don't really get, and in my opinion, you don't get a choice when a show is that good. You've got to go back.
Yeah. I don't know that I can make that amount. I would have to have such an incredible weekend of productivity at home, which frankly you wouldn't do on a weekend.
Yeah.
So it kind of feels like a no-brainer to go back. You know what I mean?
You gotta go. Well, listen, we've been talking about conventions on this show an awful lot, and I've drawn a really hard line in which I say you've got to take a hard look at the accounting. Is a show worth your time? And what I've been saying for me is that a lot of the shows that I was going to, I did the accounting and it just didn't add up.
Yep.
Having said that, that same rule works the other way around too. There's another side of that coin. If you do have a show that's doing really well for you, you've got to give it one more chance. You've got to keep giving them a chance until they fail you at least a couple of times.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep, 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 yep. But here's the thing, though, because this is also part of the equation for me. There's a certain meet and greet aspect among other cartoonists at Emerald City that has been delightful for me. Like in years past, a good chunk of the Topatico artists would be there. Other web cartoonists that we know and love would be there. And in general, Emerald City has one of the best, in fact, I might even say the best artist alley in any North American show, right?
Right.
So you get artists there that you don't get anywhere else. But I heard from a couple people that are dear and dear to my heart that they might not be coming back next year. And so that a tiny bit factors into my equation because there is business networking that goes into those shows in terms right. of trading best practices and stuff. You know, little kind of trade secrets that you only get person to person that you won't get on, say, a public podcast by two delightful individuals, you know?
Exactly. However, if that's where your head is at, if that's something that you need or want or desire out of a show, you don't need to table at a show to do that. You could save an awful lot of money and just buy a ticket.
Yeah, I have never just walked around a convention, though. I've done so many at this point that I feel like... What am I going to get out of it? I would, you know, because I tell you this, Brad, the 20 seconds that I have to walk from my booth to the bathroom, I hate humanity because the crowds drive me nuts. I just want to get to the bathroom. Can we all walk a little bit faster? Let's pick up the pace here.
Better yet, go to the city, but don't go to the show and tell people, hey, I'm going to take you out to dinner afterwards and you can do the same amount of networking there.
Right,
I guess what
right.
I'm trying to say is, here's the deal. Here's what I hear from an awful lot of people with gambler's mentality that keep talking themselves going into shows that are costing them too much money and costing them more money than it's making them. And they say, well, yeah, okay, so I didn't sell a lot, but I did some great networking. It's really important as a professional to be out there networking. And I'm telling you, if you're whipping your credit card out and going into debt doing these shows and you think you're doing it for networking, as a friend, I'm telling you, be kind to your future self who's going to have to pay those credit cards off. By all means, you can, if you want to do networking, get a ticket and network or meet the people that you want to meet after the show. Take them out to dinner. You're going to do so much better in the long run. Don't talk yourself into thinking this show is worth it because of networking.
Yeah. In fact, I'll draw an even harder line there because Brad was very kindly being a little gray on it. I think he and I would both say, do not do a show unless you are making a profit. Like, don't right. even... Never go back if you're losing money. If you made a little bit of profit, you're like, I want to give it one more year. That's fine. But if right. if you do a show once and you're like, oh, geez, never again, then cut it off. You tried it. Great. Don't do a gambler's mentality and keep trying to roll the dice. Just say, all right, tried it, lost money, not going back ever again.
Yeah.
And frankly, yeah. Brad, for me, that equation is even higher than losing money. If it's only $1,000 or $2,000 profit, equated across the money that I could make across 3 or 4 days, that's where I cut it off, frankly, because I could make more money yeah. staying at home and working on Drive or working on eBay pieces or commissions without being away from my family and without tearing up my throat, you know?
And you've got to look at what can you make over the course of a month, because in a show like this, you've effectively lost a quarter of your month easily by the time you total everything up, right?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you might be right.
In this particular case, you could easily argue that it was worth it. But if you hadn't done the kind of profit that you did do, you'd be down a quarter of your month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And your health would be a little worse for it. And there's a couple other things to factor into, too. So, yes.
Oh, listen, I didn't want to say it, but I let me put it to you this way.
I didn't want to say it, but Dave, you sound like death. You sound terrible.
The first thing that I thought of when you said you hoisted 50 pounds over your head is that, listen, pal, you and I are getting to the point where we can't keep hoisting 50 pounds over our heads. One of these days, if it was me, not you, because you're in much better shape than I am.
But not in all the case.
hoisting 50 pounds over my head, I'd hear something go snap in my back and I'd be in a bad way for the next 3 months going forward. You know what I'm saying? I would be taking a big risk lugging those freaking boxes around.
So not to make it sound like an old man, but I have to bring so many things to a show now. So now I bring a temporary back brace just in case I hurt my back. I bring all my asthma medications. I bring all my nasal saline washes. I bring my foot brace for a foot that I hurt running, doing uphill wind sprints a year or two ago. And so like now it's like grandpa's going to the Comic-Con. I'm not 22 anymore, Brad. I got to bring my sciatica pills. Like I feel, that's what I feel like. I like, oh, grandma says I have to bring my sciatica pills. Anyway. So yeah. So the point is you're not wrong, Brad. I will say this, the lesson I learned from this week from the baggage handling fees that my hotel costs were, is that I should not have done what I did, which is to bring it all in my luggage. I just should have shipped it all ahead to the hotel.
Yeah, you should have. Honest to goodness, you should have.
No, yeah, I really should have. That was a lesson learned. So that's something. And the way you do that, for those that have never tried that before, because it was actually Brad that taught me this years ago, you just call ahead to your hotel. You say, is there a baggage handling fee? How do you prefer it be addressed? Because some have privacy issues with guests.
Yep.
How do you prefer that I address it? And then you send it well ahead of time. And if it's all books, by God, send it media mail, because you can pay 15, 18 bucks for a 40-pound box. So send it media mail.
Most cases, the hotel's not going to charge you a fee, except in Chicago. I've done Chicago a number of years, and at a number of different hotels at different times during the year, I've gotten zonked and for significant amounts of money by the hotels every time I tried to do that there. So Chicago, don't try this, but every place else I've tried it and the hotel is only too happy. They consider that hospitality at those hotels, and they're only too happy to hold on to those books for you.
Yeah. And I think for me, the reason why the Seattle hotel charges is because I stay at the hotel across from the convention center at Emerald City, along with literally everybody else in the comics business. And I think they get inundated with like 300 boxes. They're like, F it, we're charging everybody. We got to make this work. So that's what they do. Anyway.
Oh, did they charge you there?
They did charge me. But I have to say, working out the math of it, it was the cost per book to ship it was still better than to bring it on the plane with a $25 there and $25 back. Bag fee, you know?
Yep.
So anyway, long story short, Emerald City was a success this year. And here's another thing about it. It turns out Seattle listens to this podcast, Brad, because here's what was happening.
Really? People, do we make it all the way out there in Seattle?
We make it out there to Seattle because here's what, while maintaining eye contact, people would be holding one of my books and they would be looking at me in the eye and they go, so I hear you're not coming back this year or next year. And I said, well, that might happen. And they would pick up a second book and buy two books. So I see you, Seattle. I see you, you stinkers, trying to make me come back.
You pulled him back in.
You stinkers with your darn kindness. And you're trying to be supportive. I see you.
Well, that's good. That's good to know that they're out there supporting you. That's fantastic.
I have to say, it did warm my heart. And so many kind words for the show. And I want to say both Brad and I appreciate it because I shared it with Brad as well.
Yeah.
The younger artists who said that it helped them career. A lot of people who said, I don't even like comic or I don't even like creating art. And I have no interest in the business of art. But I just like hearing it as though I like listening to car talk. Like, it's just, I don't care about transmissions, but those guys have a joy together. And you and Brad have that. And I thought, what a lovely sentiment.
That's the nicest compliment that you can give us, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, okay, I'm glad to hear that cartoonists listen to the show because we're talking about cartoonist stuff. So it's kind of like, yeah, I expect you to listen to that. I kind of get it that you'd be listening. But if somebody who's not really interested in comics is listening to this show, that's like immense.
That's like they're basically just tuning in for two friends being delighted about the hobby and career that they've chosen, you know? Like, that's delightful. Yeah. How lovely. That's so anyway, shout out to all those kind people in Seattle that came up with nice words for the podcast. And there were a few people, there was one person who signed up for Comic Lab with the QR code that I had on the table on Patreon, which was really nice.
Talking about that in pro tips. So you set up a QR code, three different versions, one for each of your Patreons. And you told people basically if they signed up to be a Patreon backer on the spot using the QR code, you'd give them a reward right there in person, right?
Yep, yep. And so I will be totally forthcoming that it wasn't a gangbuster success. Only a handful of people did it. But it was a worthwhile experiment to try. You know, I figured why not just try it? And what it taught me is that even though people might not be willing to do Patreon signups right there, they are willing if you say something like, well, you can get Sheldon or Drive delivered to your inbox for free via email. Just aim your phone at this QR code and you can sign up for the email signups right now. You know what I mean? Like if it's a low stakes kind of thing, I would imagine that would be very useful at the show. And you might even want to say on your banner, put a QR code and say, check out the site right now on your phone. Aim your camera at this QR code. Maybe something like that.
And frankly, if you're getting them to convert either to the website or to the email list, you can, once you've got that in place, you can low key work on that Patreon conversion for the next 6 months, right? Because you're going to be doing a certain amount of outreach through those channels as well. So it's not a loss even then. You're still going to be chipping away at them.
No, frankly, anytime you can hook a new reader into your ecosystem, there's a percentage of them that you'll get long term and that you'll bring into either book sales or Patreon or Kickstarters. So it's wonderful, easy way to hook people at a show and then get them at the long tail. But I like the way that you said you could work them low key, because for some reason that sounded like a boxing coach, like work the ribs. Okay, now get them with the Patreon. Whoa, it's an uppercut.
Yeah, you can just keep, well, you know, we always say you got to hear a pitch 7 times before you act on it. That's kind of like body work until finally you deliver that knockout punch.
Yeah. So the idea of like hooking them with a QR code or any sort of flyer, anything like that, that or even a book sale at the show, if they've expressed interest at the show, you're basically in some way, shape or form, you want to bring them into your world. And if it's with an email sign up, if it's with a going to the website, if it's with a flyer or a book sale, you basically just want to give them one more chance to be hooked into your comics from the wonderful reaction they had at the show, you know?
Absolutely.
So if somebody walks by and goes, cute, or, I love that designer, oh, that's a great joke, you immediately have some way to transfer them into your ecosystem, you know?
Yeah, you can capitalize on that moment before the moment's gone. And
exactly, yep.
Moment just to mention, because we talk social media all the time, don't discount the usefulness and the power of that standard old trusty email list. You absolutely should be building an email list. Your comics should be going out on email. That's something that should be part of your toolbox as a web cartoonist. It's something that doesn't get talked about because it's been around for so long, but it absolutely should be part of what you're doing because it's very, very powerful. And it tends to get read a whole lot more. You've got a lot better batting average than you do when you tweet your comic, for example.
And you know what? We haven't talked about it much on the show, but a lot of successful cartoonists that I know maintain a really effective email list.
Yeah.
Do not shy away from it, because although I don't have the hard numbers in front of me, my gut tells me that the rate of action taken on an email is so much higher than something via social media, whether it be Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram.
Yeah.
And part of it, I think, Brad, is you have to make an active choice to delete an email, whereas you can passively scroll by on social media, you know?
Yep. You've got to interact with that email one way or the other.
Exactly. So, and frankly, the kind of people that get on email lists tend to be the kind of people that are actively interested, not passively interested. And so even in terms of interest, not just physical action taken, there's a different type of reader. So anyway, don't underestimate the power of an email list. It's very, very effective and can make a big difference in your cartooning.
So Dave, was there any interactions at your table that were fun or that you'd like to tell us about? Because that's part of the show and part of doing a convention that always comes up. It's like, well, I talked to this one person and she was delightful, or I talked to this other person and he said something interesting. Were there any at table interactions that were fun?
Yes. So my favorite thing now in the last couple of years, more and more people are bringing their comfort animals to Emerald City Comic Con or to Comic Cons in general. This also happens in San Diego. And so this year I got to hold a tiny little teacup poodle that was dyed rainbow colors. And that was delightful. That was a highlight of the moment.
Really? They dyed it rainbow colors?
Yeah. And the dog was so sweet. Although it was a teacup. So you know when a dog is so small that it can't generate enough heat for its body? So the damn thing was shaking like a chair sold at Sharper Image. It was like, it was like, oh, you poor dog.
It was shaking like a massage chair.
Yeah, like when you're cold all the time, what is that existence? Like, you poor MF. Like, what to go through life like, I don't like existence. Just like shivering constantly. So that was one animal that got passed over to me. And then another lady put a parrot on my head and she said, will you draw my parrot? So I drew the parrot into her Anatomy of Animals book. And the parrot's verdict was to shit on my table. And I kid you not, that actually happened.
That's wonderful. What was the poodle's response?
To just keep on shaking for the rest of its life for four more years, just shaking constantly.
Compulsively.
Just life is cold. Anyway, so two other people that I met that were delightful were I met the head of comics for Kickstarter. She was insightful, quick, intelligent, creative. She's a delightful person. So it's nice to know that the head of Kickstarter Comics Outreach is great. Her name is Camilla Zhang. She's delightful. You should follow her on Twitter. And then I also, I got to tell you about this interaction. This is very on brand Dave Kellett. So Dylan McConis and Katie Lane sent down a very nice woman who was also similarly insightful and intelligent and kind. And she said, Dylan and Katie sent me down to talk to you because they thought you might want to talk about a cartooning union. And I said, oh, well, that's a topic that's been bandied about for 40 years.
Yeah.
And I said, I love the idea of it. I think it's great. I think it really could have been useful in the 90s and early 2000s for DC and Marvel artists as they were, you know, getting screwed. But the contracts have been revised a little bit and are better. But I said, frankly, it's the smaller tier publishers that are screwing 20-year-old and young 30-year-old cartoonists with really bad contracts and terrible page rates. And we talked about that, and she was really amenable and nice. And I said, you know, for me personally, I intentionally avoid any and all publishers. And so I don't need a union. I'm my own boss. So it's not like I'm going to strike against me.
Right.
I'd love to see that picketing, by the way. Dave is a jerk. Dave is a jerk.
You have one of those self-loathing days and just go on strike.
But here's the thing. In talking with her, I all of a sudden, and I don't know why, I launched into my diatribe about, frankly, I don't know why a 20 or 30 year old cartoonist would go with a publisher at all. I mean, I get that they want the legitimacy, but God, you'd have to be a dummy to go with a publisher now when you can own and control your own business and deal directly with your readerships with Patreon and Kickstarter and the cost of printing is dropped. And I go into this whole diatribe, and really, Brad, the emphasis of my point is like, I mean, you'd have to be a dummy to go with a publisher, especially a small to mid-sized publisher.
Honest to God, anybody who would sign a contract at this point in time with anybody is got to be a dummy, because, you know, those people are all out to screw us.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, so anyway, nice talking to you. Have a lovely day. And she goes, oh, I should give you my card. Hands me your card. She's the head editor of Nickelodeon Publishing. And I was like, oh, shit, what did I just do? What did I just do? What a dummy. What a big dummy. Nothing like taking a shit on someone's business model to their face. Like, oh, great. Yeah. Good job, Dave.
Yeah, there goes the Sheldon animated series.
God, you're not wrong.
You just got blacklisted, man. No pug series for you. Forget it.
In fairness to her, she was kind, she was wonderful, she was intelligent, she was insightful, and she was actually the one actively looking to help start a union for cartoonists. So she was an incredible woman. I just felt like a dummy because here I am trash talking, going with a publisher, you get the idea. But you know what, in kind of interesting news for Emerald City Comic Con. So, you know, Brad, from years past that Marvel and DC do not exhibit at Emerald City, right?
Yeah.
Which I find interesting because I think it's now the third largest show in North America after San Diego and New York. Mm-hmm. But so they haven't gone there. And then the very interesting tidbit is that Boom Studios no longer goes to Emerald City Comic Con.
Oh, really?
And I don't want to read into the tea leaves too much about that, but I found that very fascinating that Boom Studios chose, after at least a good decade or half decade of exhibiting there, to no longer exhibit there. Wow. So take from that what you will, Brad, but I thought that was interesting.
It is.
It is. We'll be texting later, David. That's what that, I want you all to know that's what Brad's tone was. Oh, we'll be talking about why Boom Studios was not there this year.
Yeah, my wheels were turning, but it was nothing I can say on the podcast.
In a non-litigious way, I'll just say we'll be talking about that later, David.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It's just like a grandmother on a porch. Mm-hmm. Come inside. We'll talk about that inside.
We'll talk about that over tea, honey.
Yeah, exactly. Come inside, honey, for tea. We're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute and stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, Brad and I are going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
Yeah, because, you know, when you do, you'll get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And an exclusive Patreon post that go even deeper on the Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, no worries.
You can still support the show by rating us wherever you get podcasts.
Leave us a 5-star review and a few kind words.
And that, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
And now, let's talk comics.
Brad, I just realized something. I got to tell you this. In preparation for the show, I made myself some tea for my throat because I sound like an old hobo riding the rails, right?
Yeah.
And there were two types of tea right next to each other in our tea drawer. One was Throat Coat, which I put with a little bit of honey to help my throat. But right next to it was a tea called Smooth Move. And boy...
Is that a laxative?
It is a laxative. And that would have been a very different podcast had I put the wrong tea in my cup for the show.
They actually call it Smooth Move?
They call it Smooth Move, which I think like every copywriter in that room must have been high-fiving when the marketing team accepted that as the name. Let's call the tea Smooth Move.
Oh my God, that's beautiful.
I mean, because like, what else do you call a tea that makes you get the trots? I mean, like, it
makes you do.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, we've been pitching a lot of names here, and we came up with the first one on the list is Johnny Craps-a-Lot. We don't feel like that's a good name. And the only other one we got here is Smooth Move. How about Smooth Move? Is that going to work? All right, everybody agrees. Hands up around the room, and we're going with Smooth Move. All right, here we go.
We were going. Oh my God. Oh God. I don't know why, but that totally got me.
dumb 5-year-old jokes. That's us. All right. Well, shall we listen to? We've done enough on Emerald City Comic Con. We've learned all about the fact that in my tea drawer we have a tea called Smooth Move. Too much that anybody wanted to know. Why don't we jump into one of our $5 questions, Bradley J? What do you think?
I think before we do that, I want to talk. Before we do that, I've got a topic that's it's really kind of burning right now. And it's,
you're going to want to see a doctor about that, Brad. Yeah.
That's a completely different tea. But so here's something I want to talk about. And that is this. You probably, over the last month or so, have seen the work of Nathan Pyle. And he's done a comic that has hit really big on Instagram and Reddit and Imgur, and it's called Strange Planet. And basically, the hook for the comic is it's these aliens, and they're talking or living through an everyday life situation, but they're talking about it like aliens, and they're using very alien language, like not alien language like Klingons, but their syntax is very unfamiliar, right? And
right.
And this guy's got over 1 million followers on Instagram. He's got 1,000 backers on Patreon. Now, before you get the wrong message, this guy's been working in comics for an awful long time. He's one of those overnight successes that's been around for 10, 20 years, right? He's done a lot of significant things, but this thing has really, really blown up because it's really kind of brilliantly written. But the thing I want to talk about is this. This guy proves, or not proves, he's a great example of what I call Geiger's Law of Worthless Ideas. Right.
Okay.
He's an excellent example of this because this idea of aliens experiencing human life and reacting to it in an alien way is an old, old, old idea. Right. It's
right,
basically
right.
at its heart, it's a fish out of water idea. And we've seen fish out of water ideas in a lot of ways. But even if you take it more significant, yeah, more specifically than that, It's the same idea that's at the heart of Charles Adams' Addams Family cartoons.
Yep.
It's at the heart of the Addams Family TV show and its kid sister, the Munsters. Let's take monsters out of it. Let's just go to aliens. It's at the heart of Mork and Mindy.
Yep.
It's at the heart of the Coneheads.
Yep.
It's at the heart of Third Rock from the Sun.
Yep.
This is not an original, quote unquote, original idea. This is a very old idea. And it's an example of what I talk about when I say that all ideas are worthless. It's what you bring to the idea. It's what your execution of that idea is
right.
that makes art. And here's a guy, this Nathan Pyle, comes out with a very old idea, aliens reacting to Earth life. Not a new idea, but the way he does it, the way he, first of all, his illustrations are charming as all get out.
Yep.
And the way he writes it, the syntax, the way he crafts his words is absolutely brilliant. And you cannot help but get enthralled in these comics. It was his execution of this old, tired idea, right? It's his brilliant execution that makes this an amazing comic. So I want to talk to you, the cartoonist listening to us at home right now, who's sitting there thinking, oh, I need an original idea. Or how about this one? I've got an idea, but I'm afraid that somebody else has done it already. If you, and by the way, those are very universal thoughts for mm-hmm. cartoonists who are starting out. If you are held back by those thoughts, I want you to look at this Strange Planet comic, and you can easily find it, trust me. I want you to look at this Strange Planet and realize that it's not a new idea. Rather, it's an old idea that this cartoonist poured a metric shit ton of originality and personality and creativity into. He did this idea brilliantly. I'm giving Dave's voice arrest by running off at the mouth here, but I just want to read this to you in case you haven't seen it. I just chose one at random. Okay.
Ooh,
just to give
you an idea. This is amazing. I've never heard you read a comic out loud before. That's not yours.
I've never, you know what?
What an experiment we're about to walk into. This is great.
Oh, I know. I've never wanted to read one before. I'm telling you, I'm really taken by this this guy's work. So there's these aliens, and they're throwing a birthday party, a surprise party for another alien, and they're throwing confetti in the air, and they go, "This is where the planet was when you emerged." And the birthday alien says, "Tiny trash," because he's looking at the confetti. And the aliens go, "And now we sing." And the birthday alien says, "Okay, I'll just stare at you." And then they bring a birthday cake. He says, "This is on fire." And the birthday alien says, "I will exhale on it." And then as he's getting ready to blow out the candles, the aliens are behind him saying, "Extinguish, extinguish, extinguish, extinguish." I'm telling you, the way this guy uses language, this is not, I bet you if you went back and looked at old episodes of Mork and Mindy, mm-hmm. you'd see them do a birthday cake gag. If you looked at Coneheads, I know you'll find one. If you look at Third Rock from the Sun, you're going to find one. But you're never going to find that written this way. This guy took an I can't say it enough. He took an old idea and he poured a metric ton of creativity into it. He did. If he would be sitting there worried about coming up with an original idea, if he would be sitting at his drawing board worrying if somebody else has done this idea, he'd still be sitting there looking at nothing. Instead, he's sitting there looking at 1 million Instagram followers and 1,000 Patreon backers. Right. So it's a good lesson for us as cartoonists. And it's what I say when I talk about the law of worthless ideas. All ideas have the same value, zero. It's not until you start pouring creativity into an idea that it actually has worth.
Yep. And that's why so many classes that talk about breaking down and then building up a new story, what they will do is they'll try to get to the elemental, the infrastructure behind the story so that you can peel away the details, peel away the character notations, peel away the elements are of the setting or the time period or that, and get to the core, underpinning the bones of the story, and then rebuild a new one, right? That's one of the reasons why they do that is because, you know, they always do that old line of there's only 7 true stories and everything builds off of that. And so you can break down Star Wars and find that it's very equivalent to a lot of the hero's journeys in Greek and Roman mythology, right?
Yeah.
And like even my story, Drive, Brad, I had concerns about like, oh, sci-fi following a crew. We've seen this, right? This has been Star Wars, Star Trek. But take it back to its core. It goes back farther than Star Trek. We've followed a crew that's against all odds by themselves. That's also Moby Dick. That's also Jason and the Argonauts. That's also Odysseus. Like you can go back further of the crew against all odds fighting against a bigger world, right? Because that's a powerful story of 20, 30 people going against the world, or as it became when Star Trek, going against the universe. And so what Brad's getting at there is that it's not that it's a new story. The bones are the same. It is exactly like Mork and Mindy. It's just the execution, the personality, the choices, the way that they have, that Nathan in this case has chosen to go about doing it is so unique and special. That's what, it's kind of like Brad's idea that there are no unique ideas, only unique executions, you know?
Right, right.
So I think I would concur with Brad that, kudos to him that he's been able to do such beautiful work with us, because it really is. It's delightful when you read it. And don't let Brad's reading scare you off. Go read it. It's delightful.
My reading was brilliant. I poured my heart into that dramatic reading.
I continue to stand by my theory that no comic can be read out loud effectively.
I had to try. That one was worth it.
I have to say, though, no, actually, you were delightful. But in general, wouldn't you agree, though, that like a comic read out loud is like dance being written about, you know?
Yes. There's a reason that Calvin and Hobbes was never collected as an audiobook.
Yeah, exactly.
Couldn't you imagine that, though? Wouldn't that be a great audiobook? Okay, panel one, Calvin's coming in from the left. He's got a stripy shirt on, but Hobbes is waiting behind the kitchen counter. Panel two.
I like that you made it like a creepy old guy. He's waiting behind the counter. All right. Oh, we're going to see some stuff now. All right. Here comes his dad. He's been biking outside and he's kind of sweaty. He's holding the bike over his shoulder.
Little Calvin, he's got
some kind of ball in his hand. Oh, shit. What's Calvin going to do with this? Oh, we're going to see some stuff here. Pazoo, the lion. Or is it a tiger? Hey, Margaret, is this a lion or a tiger in this thing? It's a tiger. All right. The tiger comes at the little boy with the spiky hair. How come nobody ain't combing that boy's hair? He looks like he just crawled out of a tunnel. Anyway, the lion-tiger thing, he hits the little boy. Pazoo! The little kid goes flying ass akimbo. Oh, my God. I wish you could see this drawing.
Akimbo.
Oh, his ass is akimbo all over the backyard, and there's stars, and there's curly cues, and there's little dots. This cartoonist really went to town. Oh boy, that kid! And look at his shoes fell off in the next panel. That lion tiger thing, kazoom! He hit him so hard, the shoes fell off. Oh, bada zing, bada zoom! That kid's not gonna mess with that tiger again. Oh God!
Oh my God! That was absolutely, you're getting a standing ovation over here. That was marvelous.
Thank you.
Now I want there to be a Calvin and Hobbes audiobook.
Oh, and the mom, she's got her head buried in her hands in the background. She's like, what the hell did I marry into? I get it, Margaret. I'm assuming that's her name. It's Margaret, right? Do they name the broad in this comic strip? Do they ever give her a name? No? All right. Oh, boy, the typical patriarchy. They don't even give her a name. They just got to write about her in the background. All right. Well, listen, I'm trying to be woke over here, and then they don't even give her a name. Oh, God.
Anyway,
I don't know.
Page two.
All right, turn to page two. Oh, it looks like Calvin's eating a tuna fish sandwich. He don't like it. He wants to give it to the tiger kid. Oh, my God, wait a minute. Here's a wrinkle that I didn't see. Margaret, the tiger ain't real. The tiger's just a toy, and the boy has imagined it. Holy shit, what a wrinkle. Got a zing, got a zoom. I didn't see that coming.
Oh, my God. I am so on board for the Dave Kellett narrated audiobook of Calvin and Hobbes.
Can you imagine if I emailed Bill? Hey, Bill, I got a fun. I'm including an audio file with this email. I just wanted to get your thoughts. Do you think it would be okay if I did a vaguely Bronx Italian guy from 1985 reading your comic?
It would be our version of Garfield minus Garfield. It would be the audio Calvin and Hobbes.
I'm going to say, without even emailing him, there's no way he's going to say no to this. I think he's going to be super on board.
Oh, how could he say no?
Yeah, Dave, I love this idea. Big green light. I'll email Andrews McMeel right now, and we'll get that audiobook going.
Oh, my God. Dave, I could listen to this all day, but I'm going to feel really guilty if we don't get to at least one $5 Patreon question for today.
God. Brad, that's the politest way to cut off a joke that's gone on too long. I could listen to this all day. I'm going to be honest. I'm having tremendous fun, but you've gone for 6 minutes on this.
I felt guilty because I know how bad your throat is feeling too, and you're giving this everything you got, and pretty soon you're going to just go silent on me.
Now he sweetens it with kindness. I'm just worried about your throat. I mean, that's the big concern here. Not that you went on 2 minutes too long with that joke. I'm worried about your throat.
All right. Well, then give me another page, damn it.
No. Feed me the question there, my friend. Frankly, I want the public to know.
Okay. Take a little sip of tea.
I did go 2 minutes too long. I should have ended that 2 minutes ago, and you're not wrong.
No, you did wonderfully. You did, but it was winding down. I could tell. So we're moving
all right,
on.
Let's keep going.
Our friend Jeff Jackson and Patreon backer, who is JK Jackson Art on Instagram, says, guys, I'm at a crossroads. I need to go digital. So I'm in a place I can make the financial commitment to going digital, but should I? Do I go all out and purchase the top of the line for the future 10 years? Or should I go lower to mid-level to get used to going digital and later on go top of the line? So he's, in other words, Dave, he's looking at buying like a digital tablet to draw.
Right.
He could afford going top of the line, but is it worth it going top of the line now? Or is it a better idea to go mid-level, not go get in over his head? Because I'm sure he doesn't know exactly whether he's going to take to this or how long that thing is going to last. What does he do? Go shoot the moon or go mid-level and work his way up?
Wow. Well, what a great question because this is the equivalent of like, do I jump into a pool deep end or do I dip my ankles in and see if I want to swim at all? Right. I guess is what you're asking.
Yeah.
So this goes back to a thing that I experienced when I first went digital, which is I wish there was a way that you could rent one for a week. You know?
Yes.
And so I almost wonder, to this question asker's point, I wonder if there is a local university or art school that they could approach and say, might I just try your equipment for 1 hour? I'm happy to pay you 20, 30, 40 bucks just to try it because it will lead to a $2,000 decision on my part, you know?
Yeah.
Or I wonder if there is a... I'm just trying. I say that out loud, knowing that that's probably not going to happen. That that's probably an impossibility.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Because I mean, even you know, that then they've got to let this person on campus, and it's a security issue.
There's liability issues.
And you know how things are. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying this guy's a security risk, but anybody who's not supposed to be on campus is generally kept off campus.
Yeah, and with good reason. Okay, so that was a dumb idea. I'm just saying that as a wish thing. I wish that that could be the case. But
yeah, no, it would be nice if you could find some place to rent some of this and just try it out for a little while.
I guess my question before my answer is, if you know that you want to go digital come hell or high water, like, I know there's going to be a learning curve. I know I'm not going to like it for the first month to 6 months, but I know I want to go this route. Then a part of me thinks, why not get the Cadillac if you can afford it, right? Which sounds like is the case here. But the Cheapy McGee part of me says, well, there's not necessarily wisdom in going Cadillac. Why not dip a toe in for a couple years? And then most electronics equipment can be sold at like at least 50% value within a 2 year purchase, right? I would think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So maybe you buy the middle one, test it, road test it for 2 years or a year, and then sell it on. That's another way to do it. Brad, what are your thoughts?
Yeah.
I have a feeling like you have a better answer to this than I do.
I'm right there with you in buying mid-level, and I'll tell you why, because there's one concept that you haven't talked about yet that we need to talk about, especially since you just recently upgraded. This equipment depreciates over time as new operating systems come out, as new tablets and new technology comes out. This stuff depreciates, and even if you get a top-of-the-line model today, the chances are very good that in a few years, even if you really nurse it along, and I'm the king of nursing these tablets along. My tablets are very old. Even if you really, really baby them and you hold off until you absolutely have to, within the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to be very tempted to upgrade your equipment. So since you're not digital right now, and since you don't know exactly how much you're going to really love drawing digitally or really maybe hate drawing digitally, I would say go mid-level with the idea that if this takes with you, if this is something that you're going to be doing long-term, if you really start to have an appreciation for it, then leave yourself open for buying the Cadillac down the road when you can really appreciate it and when you have a better idea of what features to look for that you're going to appreciate having drawn digitally for a little while. Right now, this is all alien to you, right? So buying a big tablet that's the top of the line, there's a lot that you're just not going to even appreciate or know to look for.
Right.
And if you get mid-level, you're still getting a good, solid drawing tablet, but you're setting yourself up for 3 to 5 years down the road when you do make that big purchase. Now you'll have a frame of reference to really decide, now that you're really ready to spend the money, what you're really looking for in a tablet.
Yeah, you know what? Okay, I'm thinking about this from a personal perspective, and maybe this is helpful. I just 3 months ago, Brad, bought the Cadillac of Cintiqs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is me as working as a professional now online for 20 years. But I bought that one 3 months ago after 11 years of using the mid-tier, late-model purchased Cintiq.
Yes.
So I think that might tell you all you want to know. After 11 years of using a late-model, mid-tier Cintiq, did I finally buy the Cadillac one? Now, is the Cadillac one lovely? Yes. Did I need to buy it? No, frankly, it was only because the operating system wasn't working great with the driver of an 11-year-old Cintiq that I had to go upmarket, you know? I would have kept,
exactly.
No, honest, Brad, I would have kept using it if it had kept working, but the driver just didn't interact with the new OSs better. Anyway, what I want to get at is I, a cartoonist who's making a living from his cartooning, was using a late model mid-tier Cintiq for 11 years. And what mm-hmm. I mean when I say late model is it was an older version even when I bought it. Does that make sense, Brad?
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, okay. So I think Brad and I would both say buy the mid-tier. I think that's where we land on that one, right?
Yep. And then frankly, you're going to appreciate the Cadillac a lot more
yep.
when you do decide to pull the trigger on it.
Yeah, and because part of this is also true, and Brad and I didn't mention this, but you know how younger cartoonists always ask the pros, like, Jim Lee, you're amazing. What pens do you use? as though the pen is going to give you some kind of magical power to draw like Jim Lee, you know?
Right.
And I think a part of that might be eking into your thinking, like, well, if I had the better Cintiq, oh boy, could I draw like Jim Lee. And the truth is that all Cintiqs, even the ones 11 years ago that I bought as a late model, capture your line just fine. So you're going to be okay with the mid-tier, and you're going to draw just as beautifully as you would on the Cadillac.
That's a really good point. That's something I hadn't thought of. But yeah, you're absolutely right. What you need to do first is just learn to draw digitally. And there's a whole learning curve that's going to come along with that.
Yep. Listen to Brad. Yeah.
You don't need to have top of the line. You just need to have a stylus that'll hit glass.
Absolutely. So actually Brad, that leads into the second $5 question that we wanted to answer this week. And this comes in from Audie Norman. So Brad, can I read this one to you?
Go right ahead.
So, hey, Brad and Dave. So after the past couple of shows talking about original art and your creative process, I was wondering if there's a possible way to do original art for digitally made comics. I thought it would be cool to just take a look at someone's digital file with how they layer everything, maybe in a read-only kind of file or a low-res screen capture of your process. Would that even be worth the effort to put together, or am I just crazy? Brad, don't answer that last part. Answer the first part.
I don't like that idea at all. And it's got nothing to do with I'm worried about they're going to use the file to, you know, to print from it. You know, all that read-only stuff and screen capture, all of that is built in. He's kind of thinking a few steps ahead. And he's saying, well, you know, if I give them the high res with all the layers, then they can use it to print, and they can use it to steal my copyright. I'm not worried about any of that stuff as much as I'm worried about wasting my time with something that nobody really wants, and that is to see the layers of my file. And I shouldn't say nobody. There might be one or two people who would be interested in looking at it. Fellow cartoonists, people like this, be interested in looking at that stuff. The question you've got to ask, since we're talking about, clearly we're talking about things that would be Patreon merchandise. You know, there'd be no reason to offer this otherwise. So you got to ask yourself, would they pay for it? Would this be something that would generate income in any way? And the answer is, I don't think so. I don't think it would be a big draw. I know we'd love to come up with some kind of way to reproduce the idea of original art in a digital file. I just don't think it's going to happen. It's not realistic at this point. And I don't think that the perceived value would be high enough to justify doing all the stuff that you're going to need to do to make this happen. So it's a thumbs down from me. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I see why it's of interest. Like, I actually, Brad, as we're talking, I would love to see your file, and I would love to see your files, Bradley. I would love to see your file just to see how you structure it. But let's be honest about it. It might just be of passing interest. You know, I'd be like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's how Brad does it. Interesting. All right. On with my day.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so is there an interest? Yes. Is there a curiosity? Sure. But I don't know that I would learn that much. And to Brad's broader point, I don't know that more than a handful of people would want to see my files.
No.
And I don't know of a way that I'm comfortable putting them out there. You know, like, I don't want to charge for them. Do I want to give them away? I mean, I guess that's fine. I could just give one away and just let everybody see how I do it. I mean, if somebody wants to see it, I'll send you one. But I don't know. I can't see of a way of sharing it publicly that makes it worthwhile without also telling 9,000 people that they could get something that no one wants. You know, I would be communicating to 5 people that they could get it, and the other 9,000 would be like, why did you tell me this? You know?
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you what would happen when they opened up the file. They'd open it up. They'd try to figure out your naming convention, because they don't know how you name things, right? So they try to decipher that. They'd open up those files and they'd go, oh, huh. And unless you were there talking about it, saying, okay, now the reason I did this this layer is to create a rich black. And the reason that that's done, you got to notice that it's a few pixels this way and it's done with a certain type of color. And the layer above that is just straight black. And the reason I do that is for registration. Unless you were there narrating under the hood, as it were, they'd open up that file and they'd have to decipher a foreign language that is your process. The only way I could see this idea working is if you were, for example, a colorist or somebody who is doing process videos, mm-hmm. and you were doing tutorials and you were telling people how to do this certain thing, or how coloring comes to mind because it's a brilliant example. If you were doing colorist tutorials and you were teaching people how to color comics, then you send them a high res that they can look under the hood and see what you did and how you did it, and maybe follow along in the video so they can see the effects that these filters are having, so on and so forth. I could see that having value as a tutorial type thing. But to try to ascribe value to this as a digital original, nah, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's got legs.
Yeah. So I think while both Brad and I see the passing interest from cartoonists to other cartoonists, I would agree that I don't think that has any broader or wider solution. And I think to Brad's point, I would also concur that unless I'm over your shoulder saying, well, the reason I set this layer to a 40% transparency is I wanted there to be just enough of an impact on the screen tone below it, or, you know, what, like, you'd have to explain why you did certain choices.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would be this deciphering project. It would be very opaque as to what you're looking at.
Agreed. All right. Well, Brad, let's move on to one more to end the show, and then we'll go have a nice, delicious cup of Smooth Move.
I'm there for it. So here's a question we got from a $5 Patreon backer who says, Brad and Dave. Oh, and you'll notice she lists it in a certain order. Brad and Dave. You often talk about the transition. I was wondering whether you were going to catch that.
I caught it. You're Brad, today you're being a real cup of Smooth Move today. That's what you're being.
Well, this person says, Brad.
Oh, my God, that got me. That got me. Why did that get me? Oh. What a jerk move. That's amazing.
You often talk about the transition to be full-time from part-time. For those of us who love our day jobs and have no desire to create full-time, what are some of the ways to prioritize our activities for the best possible outcomes and success at our part-time endeavors? Dave, what do you think?
Okay, so this is someone that's saying, I'm happy in my marriage and I want to stay in my marriage. Brad, do you advise that I kiss my spouse? Is that what they're asking?
You had me there, right? I would have said, I love my marriage. I'm happy in my marriage. How often do you think I should go next door and kiss the neighbor?
That's a funnier wrinkle. Oh boy. Okay, so my thought,
but I'm being totally serious. That's how I read it. But I'll tell you why after you give me your
you go ahead and launch into it, because I feel like you've got more oomph built up. Go ahead.
Well, so here's the deal. If you really love your day job and you're really all torn up about this day job, you love it, and you have, and this is your words, no desire to create full-time. You just want to do it part-time. If that's true, then prioritizing your part-time gig isn't really important to you. It's a part-time thing. Well, if you love your day job.
No, that's not fair.
No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Right. If you really are all that wrapped up about it, then I'm not saying that I'm not saying you don't love doing comics. I'm not saying that you don't enjoy it. I'm saying that the need to prioritize it isn't as great, or wouldn't be as great as it would if you actually wanted to do this full time, because you would be focusing on the enjoyment. There would be no need for things like prioritization and maximization, because that's getting in the way of your enjoying this as a part-time thing.
Okay, so I read this very different than you do. And so this is a good point of difference between the two of us. So,
all right.
I actually do think that this person is asking about effectiveness within a limited amount of time. They're saying, I do not want to transition to full time. I love my day job. I love the income. I love my coworkers. I love what I make it work. I love the healthcare. I love the 401k. As you and I both cry.
Yes, there is that.
They're saying, I read this question as them saying, but listen, with the 10 to 15 to 20 hours a week that I can do to my cartooning, how can I be most effective? And so the way I read that question is kind of like me asking a gym trainer, like, hey, listen, I can at best give 3 hours a week to working out. How can I best like do, how much cardio versus weights do I do? Because so I can use the time best.
Right.
That's how I read this question, is they're saying, look, I don't want to go full time. I actually want to stay at 10 to 15 to 20 hours a week cartooning. But how do I use those 10 to 15 to 20 hours a week effectively? Like, how can I most quickly get out a book, or how can I most effectively finish a page of comics? That's what I'm reading that as. So
I would take that as a fair reading. Now, what would your answer be?
My answer would be the same thing that Brad and I would say for someone that's trying to transition to full time, or is full time, and is trying to maintain, right? And that is, put into place structures that make sure your efficiency and your efficacy is at maximum potential, so that when you do sit down to cartoon, there's no distractions. You're enjoying it. You've got music on. There's no if there's kids in the house, someone else is watching the kids. If there's distractions, you're putting away social media, you're enjoying it. And then have not only design for efficiency and efficacy, but also have goals in mind. Like Brad and I might say, okay, I'm going to have a book out in a year because I'm doing X amount of comics. Mm-hmm. Now you're doing X divided by 4 amount of comics. So maybe you'll say, I'm going to try to shoot for a book in 3 years or 4 years. And so I'm designing all my pages now so that they fit X format book, right? You're still doing planning. You're still doing scheduling and structuring. You're just doing it more long-term. That would be my answer, Brad. What would you say?
Part of me agrees. In other words, when you use the metaphor of the gym, in other words, that this person is saying—
You remember the gym, Brad, right? Yeah, that's a concept.
Yeah. Last time I was in a gym, they still had those things that you put around your waist and they vibrated, the little bands that vibrated
your waist.
That's
right, the jiggler. I remember the jiggler.
That's right.
It's been so long since Brad has been to the gym that the last time he went, it was actually called the gymnasium. That's how long it's been since Brad went.
That's right. Last time I was in a gym, Jack LaLanne was in short pants.
Jack LaLanne was still vertical. That's how long it's been.
That was a long time ago. So I can see where I see where you're getting from. In other words, you don't have to have dreams of going to the Olympics to go to the gym to get healthy.
Yes, that's what I'm getting at. Yes, yes, yes.
And that's a much more, that's probably more accurate to what this person's saying. I'm going to say two things. Number one, I'm going to stick a little bit to my guns and say, if you're not doing this with an idea that this is, you're working towards a career, then you should be focused on enjoying it first. I'm going to stand by that one. I think you should be focused on enjoying yourself. And having words like efficiency and prioritize and stuff like that seems to me like it would drain from the role that this is playing in your life, which is something you really love doing. That being said, being able to just give yourself space and do those things that Dave talked about. In other words, mm-hmm. kind of setting some easy to hit goals that you're not stressed out about, and kind of keep this in the proper zone in your life, giving it its proper importance and not stressing out about it, seems to be like the best way to go, I think. I think probably between the two of us, Dave's got the better advice.
Yeah, I would agree that Dave has the better advice here.
Yeah, second in our list, but first in our heart is what I say about Dave.
ever thus in our friendship, Brad. I think because I'll look at it this way. Like, I have yet to do it, but at some point in my life, I want to learn Spanish classical guitar. And I think even though I want to do it for enjoyment, to Brad's point, I want to enjoy it, I still want to learn it the most efficient and efficacious way that I can. So I'm going to want to put into place a schedule, and I'm going to want to put into place coaching at the right times, and I'm going to want to put into place an area in the house maybe that I know mentally when I go to, I'm going to be playing guitar. And so I think that is a version of what this person is asking. They're asking, like, how can I tackle this fun, much-loved hobby that I don't want to make full-time, but maybe I want to make it pro-am, you know, professional amateur. And how can I make best use of my time to make it pro-am? And I think the same things that Brad and I communicate on the show week in and week out can be applied even to a pro-am or an amateur, which is remove distractions, enjoy the process. If you're enjoying it, your readers will enjoy it. Approach it with professionalism no matter what level you're at. And I think you'll be fine. I think your heart already knows what the answer is, which is to handle it in the same way that a pro would do it, but just to do it on a more lengthened time frame is what I would
say. Yeah, and don't stress out about it. In other words, I can tell you everything Dave said is absolutely accurate, but after he pulls the trigger on learning classical guitar, when he's got a Kickstarter going, he's probably not going to spend a lot of time practicing guitar. He's going to be focused on the Kickstarter. And that doesn't mean that he's not a good guitarist. It just means that there's priorities and he's not going to feel guilty about it, beat himself up about it. He's just going to say, okay, I'm going to pick that guitar up next month.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I will absolutely grant you that point. So Brad, having go ahead.
No, I was agreeing that I made a good point.
Oh man.
Well, on that, I better end on a high note because I don't think I've got any more good points left in me. So I'll say this. You've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been the Smooth Move, Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And Dave Kellett, the co-director of Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
The Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions at www.woodsong.media.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice, patreon.com/comiclab.
So it turns out the kid's stupid. He's come up with this game called Calvin Ball. It ain't got no rules. He's just making this shit up as he goes.
In case you don't notice these rules, he's making them up.
He's making them up. I knew a guy like that. Hey, Margaret, you remember Jimmy Tanzoni? Remember the kid down the street? Yeah, he got hit on the head by that cop, the horse cop that kicked him in the head. Remember? Anyway. The horse cop kicked him in the head. Anyway, Jimmy Tanzoni used to come up with games, rules all the time in games, just like this Calvin kid with this Calvin Ball. Anyway,
one all right. Thing is, after he got hit by the horse cop, the rules got really wild.
Yeah, he got really wild. Oh boy, he also saw things just like this kid does. All right, well, anyway, page 28.
He's back in school. Looks like he's gonna get bullied, and it turns out his teacher's an alien. Who would have figured that?
What a plot twist.